Most of them, when they seek me or I'm referred, they're just thinking about paperwork. But I'm like, okay, there's a whole lot more to starting a nonprofit than paperwork. That's just one tiny little element. And so I back them up. I make them start thinking about marketing, branding. Is there a need? What is your niche? What problem are you really solving? And are you really focused on the right why you want to start this organization?
My guest today on Mission Impact is Dr. Victoria Boyd. We talked about the misconceptions about starting a nonprofit, why a program logic model is a better place to start for new organizations than a business plan, and some of the key questions that nonprofit founders need to ask themselves as they get started. I appreciated Dr. Boyd's emphasis on the importance of building a logic model for your programs. Nonprofit funders expect your nonprofit organization to be able to demonstrate its impact. And while there are many ways to approach this, building out your organization's theory of change and your program-level logic models is an important step. Now, these may sound a little esoteric or wonky, but there is so much value in doing this work, especially when you do it collectively. When I'm working with organizations to help them map out their theory of change and logic models, I do not want this to be a solitary activity assigned to just one staff member. In most cases, I'm working with organizations that already have established programs, but may have never taken the step to visually map out how their program works and how it fits into their organization's larger theory of change and mission. And as Dr. Boyd will explain, a program-level logic model maps out what it takes to deliver the program, its assumptions embedded within it, the short-term, medium-term, and long-term outcomes. A theory of change shows visually and in writing how your organization's work connects to and moves your mission and vision. Forward. Taking the time to work together to create both of these will make apparent any gaps in logic, understanding, and agreement about what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve within your organization. It provides you with the opportunity to work through these to come to more clarity and shared understanding and vision about which really strengthens your work and your organization. And as I said, tackling this as a collective project also helps educate everyone involved, not only about the process itself, but also about the why and the how you do what you do. It can contribute to breaking down silos in your organization. With the information you ultimately collect because of this work through your evaluation, you're also able to better tell your story of results to donors, funders, board members, volunteers, community partners, and decision makers. Mission Impact is a podcast for nonprofit leaders who want to build a better world without becoming a martyr to the cause. I'm Carol Hamilton, your podcast host and nonprofit strategic planning and evaluation consultant. Mission Impact is brought to you by Grace Social Sector Consulting. Grace Social Sector brings you whole brain strategy consulting for nonprofits and associations. We help you move your mission forward, engage all voices, and have fun while we're doing it. We combine left brain strategy and analysis with right brain wisdom about human complexities for a proven whole brain, whole organization process through which every stakeholder thrives. Reach out to us for support and facilitation of strategic planning, demonstrating your social impact, or just getting started with an organizational assessment. Check out gracesocialsector.com for free resources. We especially love working with staffed nonprofits and associations with human-centered missions. So welcome, Dr. Boyd. Welcome to Mission Impact.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited. I love sharing to the nonprofit world. But I'm a teacher. Hey, that's what I do.
So that leads me to my very first question. What drew you to the work that you do? What would you describe as your why or what motivates you in terms of the work that you do with nonprofits?
And it really didn't start with nonprofits initially. I taught dance for 28 years. And I was in a public high school, semi-performing arts high school, and I was always in fundraising mode. And also being in the arts, I tended to participate in a lot of organizations that were arts-centered, Michigan Dance Council and different things. And I ended up serving as executive director, president of the board, many different administrative roles. And I learned a lot of the gaps, or I saw a lot of the gaps that were happening. And so after I left teaching, after 32 years, I was still in nonprofit mode. And I moved to Nevada from Michigan. And I actually saw that the nonprofits out here were a little bit behind in terms of just strategies and how they thought about it. And it was the nature of the community, because we have the big conglomerate, okay, the casinos that were giving out a lot of money. And so nonprofits really didn't learn how to structure. I ended up teaching nonprofit management at UNLV for about 8 years, but I still saw gaps of what they still needed to learn. And in a university setting, there's set curriculum, and that's all they teach. And so I ended up creating courses that I felt that there was a need. And that sort of mushroomed into a whole another stratosphere. And because my passion is to see individuals reach their full potential, whether it's when I was teaching in high school or what I'm doing now, now it's focused on helping nonprofits or the founders that want to start those things reach your full potential, giving you the tools, strategies, tips, and ideas, the insights that will help them think about building sustainability and success. So that's sort of how I got here.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And you actually mentioning those founders, it seems like you kind of work with a segment of the sector that I don't generally work with. I'm not generally working with organizations right as they start out. I'm often working with a new executive director who comes in and wants to do a strategic plan, or, you know, an organization, maybe they've been around for 25 years, but they've just recently shifted from all volunteer to staffed organization, those kinds of transitions. So generally they've got a history, but I'm curious for those folks who kind of see a need, they want to address it, they want to start an organization. What do you see as some of the big misconceptions about what it actually means to start a nonprofit?
Yeah, most of them, when they seek me or I'm referred, they're just thinking about paperwork. But I'm like, okay, there's a whole lot more to starting a nonprofit than paperwork. That's just one tiny little element. And so I back them up. I make them start thinking about marketing, branding. Is there a need? What is your niche? What problem are you really solving? And are you really focused on the right why you want to start this organization? I've been the, I hate to say it, the naysayer or the killer of dreams. Sometimes you have to... What can I, you know, I bear the sword. But if they say, well, I want to create a job for myself. Well, no, that's not why you need to start a nonprofit.
Right.
Yes, a job or a position might come down the road. But if that's your primary reason for starting it, no, let's back up. But also just, I really enjoy helping them have those aha moments. That when I start talking about, okay, this is, I call it before, during, and after. Before is before you file any of the paperwork. That's where you should be doing your logic model. I've been working with the Small Business Development Centers and SCORE, and a lot of them, because those counselors are from the business background, they tell them to start with a business plan. They're not ready for a business plan. They don't even know what those terms mean. They need to start with the program plan, because that's where they want to have impact and they need to understand what that will be. And so if they start with at least the framework, the outline of a logic model, they then can then create their purpose statement. They then can create a good name for their organization. They can use the outcomes of that framework to recruit board members. And so it's rethinking where to start. And the other type of individual that comes to me, they're just confused. They don't know where to start, what to do. And I just said, you know, let's have a discussion. You don't even need to worry about that. I can handle that for you. But then, you know, once all of that paperwork is done, now you're in the during. So what are those first next steps? What are the priorities that you need to think about? Your website, you know, becoming and building those programs out, building your board, and what are going to be some of your fundraising strategies? So that's the during. And then afterwards, it's ongoing support. What is your fundraising plan, marketing strategies? How do you use a Google grant? So I cover a spectrum, but it's still for what I call the infant organizations. They're new in their structure. They're still developing, but they need that guidance to get them where they need to go.
Right, which is always critical at that beginning point with those kind of infant organizations.
My initial, because they said, well, how much does it cost? I said, do you want financials realistic? Or I said, realistically, to launch a nonprofit, you need at least $5,000, at least, because you got to build a website. You need, you know, you need my services, but and you need to pay the fees for state filing and IRS. And there's just some startup things. And do you have a logo? Do you have, you know, all of these little things. How are you going to launch your program? You know, so that's just a starting point of, you know, I call that the baseline, at least 5,000. You need to aim toward 20 though, you know, as a startup. So that's that. It's great working with them because I love seeing them get excited about this new entity that is growing. And then I love helping them continue.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even before that, you know, before jumping into building a logic model or thinking about, you know, what is your program structure, you know, I've also gone on podcasts and been that dream killer where I'm like, do you need to start this organization? Who else is already addressing the problem you're wanting to solve? What work is already happening in the community? Can you go join forces with them in some way first, you know, and then think about whether it's really, really necessary to create another organization? And every community is different, obviously. Not as, you know, but I think, you know, one of the things that's kind of been brought from the whole push to have organizations, nonprofit organizations, kind of act more like businesses is to, you know, well, what's your competitive edge? Well, we actually, as nonprofits, the less we're in competition with each other, the better, the more we're complementary in terms of the program that we offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of a lot of that philosophy is how the name of my foundation, Philanthropreneur, even though you're in philanthropy, you need to think like an entrepreneur. But that's more what my point of view is, marketing. Are you really creating good marketing? Are you creating revenue streams? Is your fundraising diversified and a wide range? And how are you communicating your message? You know, who is your target audience? And they don't really think about, you know, you have two separate target audience. You have who you serve, or, you know, what is your why? But then you have who wants to follow you? Who would be interested in what you do? They're not necessarily who you serve, but where will you find supporters? And so they have to think of it from an entrepreneurial viewpoint of how to do all that. No, they're not in competition, but they definitely have to prove and show the impact that they have in the community. And that becomes the core of their message across all elements. The marketing message, the program development and outcomes and how it's structured and how they do the evaluation. Recruiting board members, they want to, what's the why? What's the impact we have? Show me. And so there's a thread that goes all through it. No, you don't act and function as like a business, but you are a for-purpose business. And there's certain elements that still need to follow that framework.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things you mentioned was a logic model, and that's something that I help organizations out with to really break down. So in your case, you're helping them take an idea that's in their head and really, you know, map out right. What are all the parts of it. Can you tell folks a little bit more about what a logic model is and how that can be helpful as a new, you know, a founder is kind of getting started?
Absolutely. The logic model, I call it the heartbeat of your organization because it's veins and arteries go into all the other different departments. I know I'm visualizing here, but but as the heartbeat, it guides, it follows your mission statement, but the mission statement evolves out of your programs. Think about it. You want to start this nonprofit because you want to solve this problem. You want to change the world in some way. And so what you're saying is that you want to have impact in the community by, and that is, if you do this, this will happen. And that's really the framework of what a logic model is. It starts with, what's the change? What's the impact? That theory of action that's at the end. What outcome and impact do you want to have? And then you work backward. So how are you going to achieve that? Because there's long-term, intermediate-term, and short-term. So for example, if you're doing a training program, if that's one of your programs, what do you want them to walk away with after that training? And it's not just what they're going to learn, but how are they going to take that learning into action? That's the intermediate result. And then in the long run, by implementing or changing how they act, make decisions, whatever that learning that they got in the action, what is the ultimate outcome that will happen because of that? Okay, I'll use an example that I use all the time. A woman's program trying to improve their literacy to get better jobs. So they take a workshop to improve their job application skills. Okay, so now they take that knowledge and apply for different jobs using those skills. And the outcome is that they have better jobs, more income, and they're able to be a vibrant part of the community and with a stable income. I'm making that up real fast. So, but those are just the outcomes. Then you back into, okay, so what are the inputs? Okay, you need to have a workshop. Oh, we need to have a space. We need chairs. We need a facilitator. We need all of these things to do that workshop. And so those are called your, that's your outputs, that you're going to give a workshop and you need all of these things and curriculum material, and it's going to be for women that need better jobs. Those are the participants. Then you look at the inputs. Okay, so as an organization, what do we have to put in there? We need money. We need a venue. We need someone to teach this, a facilitator. Are we going to need grants and materials? Do we need equipment to print out this? Is it virtual? So do we need a computer to present this? So it's looking at all of the elements. Now, that input also helps you create the budget for it. Because, okay, so in order to do this activity, what is required? And that's where the program budget evolves. And so now you're looking at the finances. At the end, on the outcomes, if you're the marketing department, you take that language and create your messaging to create donor appeals and things like that. So each separate element, you have the problem statement, which is that's where you start. And it's a chart. It's really mapped out.
Yeah, so I love the visual part of it, of helping people really.
Yeah, it's a visual representation of a roadmap.
Exactly.
So you start with the problem statement over there on the left-hand side, and then you jump all the way to the right-hand side where you have the outcomes. Skipping all that inputs and outputs stuff first, you decide what it is you want to do. The analogy I use is, if you're going on vacation, you pick the where you're going first before you decide what type of clothes do I need, swimsuit or ski gear? Am I flying or driving? What are we going to do there? And how much money is it going to take to do this trip? That's a good way of just framing what a logic model does for you and what we do every day. If we're planning trips, you know, we start with where we're going
first. The end in mind, yep.
Yep, the end in mind and then back. And that's exactly what the logic model does. But most people haven't looked at it in a framework form. They know they want to do this, but they don't think about if I do this, this will happen. And that's called the theory of action. Do this. If this happens, this will happen. And it helps them really clarify what they're doing. Now, the logic model won't be the overall thing. You might have several different programs. And, you know, what if you need to teach for this literacy to get a better job? You need to teach life skills, financial budgeting. Those would all be different programs. And so it's a framework that once you get the knack of really pulling it out and using it, it really, really helps to visualize. And it can be used across the entire organization to help everyone first, be on the same page,
exactly,
but actually have tools to use in their own departments.
And then once you've done that, I think, you know, especially helpful when I think at that very beginning stage where you have maybe one person or a few people who are coming together wanting to do something, you know, they are able to make sure that they're all in agreement of what are they assuming in each of these stages of like what if this then that.
But yeah, that's underneath it. The assumptions and external factors. I didn't get into all of the
I was just gonna say but then even further down the line to come back to it later and, you know, either say what's changed and what needs to be updated or you know, from we're now implementing the program, are we seeing the actual results?
Because there's five elements, and after you map that out, I gave the edited version.
Sure.
The cliff notes, but what's layered on top of all of that is the evaluation.
Absolutely.
Process.
Yep.
This is a works in progress.
So what are some other things that you would say folks thinking about starting an organization need to consider before they worry about the paperwork that you talked about?
Well, it's also, you know, you mentioned, you know, is it needed? Are there other organizations doing the same thing? So I frame that as what makes you unique, not competitive, but what makes you unique. What problem are you solving that there's a true gap in the community that you're filling that gap? Yes, there's a lot of animal organizations, but some are only focused on it's called urban dogs. They go to the homeless and help them with their pets because a lot of homeless people have pets. And then there's the big foundations, the shelters, you know. So there's a lot of different ways. So let's say you're helping animals, the seniors with vet cost. So that's a very unique and targeted population. And so that would come across different and you might not see that service being helped. What if you're doing training for first responders or what is called tune-up training? One of my clients is that's what they do. They do dog training with police officers, those that have the animals, and once a year they can do what is called a tune-up training for their work dogs. Totally interesting. But it's a unique, very focused service that they're providing that meets a unique need.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that uniqueness is definitely super important. So as we come to the end here, on each episode, I ask each guest, what permission slip would you give nonprofit leaders on or what you would invite them to consider to avoid being a martyr to the cause? Because that's a big thing that we struggle with in the sector. Also thinking about it in terms of kind of how might they work towards cultivating a healthy organizational culture? So what invitation or permission slip would you give to help or leaders avoid being a martyr to the cause?
Absolutely. I love this, love this. Be an intentional leader and build other leaders. Mm. You're not the end all. You don't have to do it all. There's so many leaders out there that are overwhelmed because they're trying to think about all of the different elements. Build your team so that they are leaders also. Give them the autonomy. Empower them to be creative and think outside. But on the other side, that means you have to equip them with the tools they need and allow them to access a lot of your knowledge as a leader because you've gotten that role because of certain, you know, experience or skills that you have. Share those skills and build a culture of leadership. I call it intentional leadership, where it's not about leading and carrying the flag, but you're actually turning around and pulling people. I love that image, up the mountain with you. So that would be the one thing. And being an overwhelm can be solved by just prioritizing and looking at all of these challenges and deciding which one is a good fit for you, which can be delegated, and what are the priorities for the organization?
Yeah, 100%. I love the idea of not having to do it all yourself and building other leaders as you go. That's really key, and that's obviously so integrated into the work that you're doing. So I really appreciate it. Well, Dr. Boyd, thank you so much for coming on Mission Impact. It was a wonderful conversation and great to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I really appreciate the time you spend with me and my guests. You can find out how to connect with Dr. Boyd, her full bio, the full transcript of our conversation, as well as any links and resources mentioned during the show in the show notes at missionimpactpodcast.com/show notes. And if you think evaluation work is something that your organization could benefit from, definitely please reach out to us at graysocialsector.com. I'd like to thank Isabel Strauss-Riggs for her support in editing and production, as well as Sharday Carbonell of 100 Ninjas for her production support. We'd love it if you would take a minute to rate and review Mission Impact on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps other people find the podcast, and we really appreciate it. And until next time, thank you for everything you do to contribute and make an impact.